The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
It is July 15th. It is time for K4Wins.com, the show. K4 Winners on X. Of course, we got SEC Media Days going on right now. We got the All-Star Game going on later on tonight. We got a little over 6 weeks till college football season comes underway. And we got a little over 2 weeks until the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. And I know that game doesn't mean a whole lot. We'll start right there before we do any introductions. Case, what kind of action do you get in Las Vegas on the Hall of Fame game since it is the first game to actually bet on? I bet there's some people that are just jonesing to put some cash on the National Football League in 2 weeks. Case, can you hear us? And that would be just about right. Let's go with you, Kip. Let me ask you this. I know I'm going to lay some action on it. Normally, in any preseason game in the National Football League, I just take the underdogs because it doesn't matter who's favored in anything. It seems like the underdogs carry about a 75% success clip. But will you be betting on the Hall of Fame game, Kip?
Unless you guys can send me a report on who all the painters and former and soon-to-be house framers and insurance salesmen are playing in the game, I'm probably going to sit that one out. I'll watch the first quarter, hoping to see one or two names I recognize. But I can't generate any enthusiasm just because they're wearing NFL uniforms. It's not an NFL game.
Yeah, I think at one point there was some guy who was stocking shelves at a grocery store. It turned out to be
that guy, Kurt Warner, turned out to be pretty good.
Pretty quarterback. Kai, obviously, you've been working both sides of this, casinos, the whole nine yards. What kind of action do you expect on the Hall of Fame game?
I mean, it'll pick up just because it's the first football game. There's going to be people that are going to play it no matter what.
Yeah.
You're going to see about 20% probably of your normal football players play some sort of action on that game.
We love to see that. Kai Gregory, he is a guy who's been, he's got well over 30 years of experience in college gaming and, of course, betting, period. Tony Curry here, of course, I worked for ESPN, did 40 years of classic rock radio, not to mention some sports stuff as well for like 25 years. I did a show with Al Greco and Jay Barker and Kip Kiefer, who's been working as the executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, now owned by the Porch Creek Indians. They have a place in Aruba. We want to do our show from down there, by the way, Kip. You know, we're
working on that.
That's going to happen. And I'm afraid it's once I get down there going topless and looking at iguanas all day, I will never come home. I will never come back. So I may have to take the kids with me. But Kip joins us. And Case, who is, of course, the chief editor of the Las Vegas Sun, will join us here in just a few minutes. We go through some technical difficulties. We'll get on it. Let's start tonight. My son is over in Clemson this past weekend cleaning out his dorm room. And he says, I'll be home at like noon on Sunday. And then it's 2 on Sunday. Then it's 5 on Sunday. Then it's like, I'll be home tomorrow. And then it's 3 on Monday. Then it's 4 on Monday. And then last night he texts me from 7:30 and he's at Truist Park. I said, what the hell? He goes, I'm at Truist Park. You're not taking the All-Star game tomorrow night. I got off 285. There was a stadium. I pulled off, found a place to park, and so I'm here for the Home Run Derby. He didn't go in. Tickets were about $150 a pop, but he did watch a rally last night, get it done, the first catch or first switch hitter to win a Home Run Derby live from Truist Park, and he did come home last night about 10 o'clock. We got Scooble and Skeens going on later on tonight, and, I mean, the numbers don't lie. American League has won 10 of the last 11, and they're 22-4-1 the last 27 All-Star games. Kip, I'll start with you. I mean, if you look at trends, and I know these are useless Tony Curry facts, trends work, man. I mean, if you look at something, that's why we look at things to see what happened in the past, to see what's going to happen in the future. Winning 22 of the last 27 games, would there be any reason not to take minus a -115 later on tonight in the AL?
Yeah, I mean, the American League seems to win every time. I don't know if they take the game more seriously. And it's now an oddity because it used to be the leagues were completely separate. You had different umpires for the American League. You didn't play interleague. And of course, in this century, all that's changed. It's really just one giant homogenous product now. You play every single team. There's familiarity. The umpires are common. They might get assigned an American League game on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're in a National League park Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So a lot of the differences in the leagues have completely changed, and it hasn't really broke the trend. Growing up, the National League beat them just about every time. Yep. And it was a long trend. My friend Jim Heffern, Tony Curry territory guy from Fort Thomas, Kentucky, that moved to Atlanta. Jim and I, and Jim's a huge Reds fan like you are, Tony. Every year we called it the great relief when the National League put up another win. But now we've been anything but relieved in the last 26 years because Kai Gregory and his rotten Red Sox American League wins every single year, no matter what.
Well, it seems like, you know what it seems like? It seems like the game's never been the same since we had the 7-7 tie.
Oh, that's a good point.
I mean, since the 7-7 tie, all hell broke loose.
That was so embarrassing.
It really was embarrassing, and I don't know why it feels that way, but Kai, what's your thoughts on it?
You know, I'm sitting here while we're talking about it, just going through the rosters and going through the pitchers, and I've seen it's like everybody out there is picking the National League, though. They're saying this is the year in a low-scoring National League game. Look, and if you look at the rosters, the starting lineups, okay, maybe the National League has an advantage, you know, early on. As you get into what probably is going to start happening in the third inning after everybody gets in at bat anyway, and you go into the reserves, the American League they have better numbers on the bench, you know, in my opinion. Now obviously it's in Atlanta, so they're going to try to leave, you know, Acuna in, maybe get Matt Olson some more at bat, you know, leave them in. So just in case
that's not going to help the National League if you watch the Braves, that's not very reassuring. Acuna's batting second. Now you watch, he'll go yard later on tonight, but, that doesn't seem to help.
If I did anything, I would have to stick with the American League. I think the American League has the better pitching lineup as you get through. They have the better relievers. It's everything says American League except for the fact that it's in a National League park and they get the last at bat.
But how apropos would it be to have a guy with the worst win-loss record in all-star history being 4-8 in Skeens? He's getting no run support with a 2.01 ERA and 4-8, end up winning the National League. That's the other thing is, you know, it's so easy to look at starting pitchers because we figure they're going to go 5 or 6 innings if they have a good outing. These guys are going an inning, or maybe an inning and a third, maybe 2 innings tops. So you want to look from top to bottom. And by doing that, you're also having a different look almost every single time you're up to bat. So it makes it more difficult. With that being said, 7.5 over-under. Kip, what do you like, the over-under?
It seems like it's trended toward under in recent years. I might be wrong about that, but because I didn't really research the game, but it doesn't seem like it's usually a very firework laden affair. Usually seems like it's 4-3 or 3-2. So the number's probably about right. But I just kind of have the inclination that maybe we're due for. It seems like the games have been really tight the last 7 or 8 years. Maybe this is going to be the year we're going to see an 8-2 game or something. So just off the top of my head, I would be more comfortable having over than under in this game.
Kai, over under 7.5.
You know, I what I would love to see, and one of the things I want that I'm going to put out there, and it's like a 4,000-1 odd or 40,000-1 odd, is Jacob Mizorowski for MVP. Just because I've never liked the Philadelphia Eagles. I've never liked the Philadelphia Phillies. I've never liked the Philadelphia 76ers. And to see the Phillies that are out there yang-yang, running their mouth about Mizorowski, whether he deserved to get it or not, having 5 starts, being assigned to the National League All-Star team, I would love
That's crazy.
The manager put him in and maybe him get the save. You know, come in, throw 100 with his 92-mile-per-hour stinker, you know, do something like that, him come in a great spot. But I definitely think as warm as it's supposed to be and humid, I think the ball's going to fly. If I bet anything in this game right now, I'd bet the over.
I think I would, too. And longer the days that I used to have the Cincinnati Reds had 5, 6, 1 year in 1977, I think they had 7 All-Stars. Like I think there were five All-Stars that actually started the game in the National League for the Cincinnati Reds. Now Dela Cruz is the only guy that's going to get in, and he's not even starting. So, yeah, it is a lot of fun. And I know that the players certainly appreciate the fact that after about a 90-95 game stretch, they get a little bit of a break, and then they get to see some friends and family. And it's fun. I appreciate the fact they bring their kids on the field. I think that's super cool. So it'll be a lot of fun. We'll stick with Major League Baseball. Toronto, Detroit, Houston, Phillies, Cubs, Dodgers are your leaders right now. Yankees, Bo Sox, and Seattle in the wild card situation. Milwaukee, Mets, and San Diego picking it up in the National League. Is that what what do we say? I know you guys, did you guys have something about a bet or something with over-unders on how many of those teams back in June 1st? What do we have on June 1st? Refresh my memory, please.
Back on June 1st, you had the Yankees, Detroit, Seattle, the Mets, the Cubs, and the Dodgers leading their divisions. Now you have Toronto, Detroit, Houston, Philly, the Cubs, and the Dodgers. So the under 4.5 that I took was the winning play, as that goes. It's kind of crazy if you look at it. And I mean, even one of the teams that has the best record, close to the best record in baseball, is 5-5 their last 10 games. Did Detroit get swept their last series? Or?
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean,
the Mariners. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're 59-38. You know, they have the best record in baseball right now, by percentage wise, at a .608 winning percentage, and you know, just and you know, the big dumper hitting bombs against them didn't help them at all. And so you know, the question becomes: how many of those guys now were at the halfway point? How many of those teams, and what's the over-under now on how many of those teams end up winning the division?
Well, and I think, too, you know, how many of those teams, like my Cincinnati Reds are 3 games over .500, they're not going to go out and find anybody. If anything, they'd scrap their lineup, and I hate that because they don't have a lot of money on their payroll, but they're only 2.5 games out of a wild card. So if you can keep what you got and make the playoffs, they're going to be really happy as a small team. It's going to be interesting to see how some of the big dogs are actually to go out and do some shopping towards the end of the year to pick up an extra pitcher, maybe an extra starting pitcher for some of these teams that maybe like a Skeens. Is Skeens going to be in Pittsburgh by the end of the season?
Okay, he's going to be there. Yeah. But hey, you know, you look at this and you're talking about Cincinnati being 5 games over. Well, back on June 1st, they were 3 games under 500. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty decent little turnaround. I mean, yes, I'm going to talk about them because they're my team. But Boston was 3 games under 500 June 1st. Now they're 8 games over. It's 11 game turnaround in 45 days. I mean, that's pretty good. But a 10 game win streak right before the All-Star break will help
that. No. It does feel like in any league, if you can just roll off 6 in a row, you're putting yourself in a position to play for the playoffs, regardless of unless you're in the White Sox in Colorado. I mean, if you can just win 6 games in a row.
The Braves were 3 games under 500. They're 11 games under 500 now.
Yeah, not good. I said on the show a couple weeks ago that after I saw Boston for 3 straight games in Atlanta and realized the youth on that team, I knew they were young, but I didn't know they were that young. I think they're a scary team going forward. You see these kind of teams that have all these young guys kind of click at the same time, and the Red Sox made a couple of real savvy pitching moves in the offseason. I think they're a dangerous team to win the whole thing.
Well, they're so young, they don't realize they're not supposed to be winning.
That's right.
The win streak was fun. I mean, and that's one of the things that, you know, Cora has talked about is how much fun, he even put it this way, the kids are having. It's a job to so many people, and they turned it into that instead of realizing, you know, like we tell our 12-year-olds that are playing or the high school kids. I mean, it's a game. And, you know, if you love what you're doing, then you never work a day in your life.
That's right.
You guys get to play the game of baseball, and instead of and baseball is the biggest game also out there. That's a game of failure, where a guy that gets on base, you know, 30 out of 100 times can make it into the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things you tell kids as they're growing up is it you're choosing a game that you are destined to fail. The greatest pitchers out there are still going to lose games. They're still going to have bad outings, and people are still going to make errors. And if so many people get jaded by the time they're 27 years old, when they finally make it to the pros, if you will, or if they've gone up and gone back down and had to fight through, but it's such a grind that they forget it's a game. Have fun.
Yeah, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com on the X as K4Winners. You can check us out. Of course, we leave plays on that, not to mention, of course, our website. Let's go through our numbers real quick before we much get deeper into the show here, because we got some college football to get into, and we've already given you the American League and over tonight if you want to go ahead and play your All-Star game to make a little extra cheese there before we get ready for college football season. How did our numbers look last week, Kai?
Last week, 22-8.
Nice. Nice.
Pretty good rate, 73.3%. Year to date, we are 5-88, 3-10, and 4 for a 65.4%. I did email somebody back. We had a couple of questions. One of them is for Case, who isn't here, but one is for Kip that I thought was real interesting that he could do. He says, Kip, why did you pick horse racing as a career? What is your favorite event? And that's john247@gmail.com. Sent that in to us.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I won't tell my life story because we only have a 45-minute show, but I got into horse racing as a child. I think I mentioned it on the air a couple weeks ago. I grew up in the Washington D.C. area. My dad was a horse player, pretty much just a weekend guy. Every Saturday, he had to be at the races somewhere, and we had three tracks back in those days in the D.C. area, Laurel, Bowie, and Pimlico, and they were all open different times of the year. So from about the time I was 5 years old, I was in tow every Saturday. He bought me a hot dog, he bought me a Coke, and bought me a program, and it didn't take me long. I was a better handicapper than him when I was about 7. So in second grade, I became pretty savvy. He always was a sucker for the favorites. I to this day look for every kind of way to beat the favorites. But with that introduction, my parents had divorced when I was in high school, and my dad, we had moved to Atlanta, and that was an idyllic, great place for childhood. But I kind of got away. I'd watched the Derby and followed it, the sport still. But my dad was transferred to Memphis, and there was a huge Greyhound racing track. I'd never seen a dog race before. But my dad, once again, seeking action, had become a regular there and had a spot up in the kennel club. So when I graduated from high school, he was trying to lure me to Memphis, because it was going to be a lot less for him to pay for my college tuition where he lived. And the long and short of the story was, I started going out to the dog track with him, got really into that. And the next season, they had the longtime announcer retire. And he said, you ought to go talk to them about becoming the track announcer. I was 22 years old by that time. I had gone back to Atlanta for a year. Long and short of the story, I found myself as the voice of Southland Racing. And although I was destined to be the next great play-by-play man, I was already interning at a radio station in Atlanta. This gave me a chance to get on the air and be the broadcaster every day. And I really got into the sport because I found out that the talent level in the racing business was not the most impressive. So in just a couple of years, I kind of shot up the ladder, and I didn't get into conventional broadcasting, but I was still doing racing programs and calling races. So that's how I got into it. And it's been a great situation for me, because my first love will always be broadcasting. But being in the racing business has allowed me to keep my radio and television and broadcasting opportunities as a parallel to that. And, it's been pretty much a 40-year career in doing both. So I started when I was 22. And so I loved horses, but I got a chance to actually get in the business, and that's how it happened.
I was watching Histories and Mysteries last night with Lawrence Fishburne. They had the brand new look. The one in the show was What Happened to Bugsy Siegel? And of course, the whole show is about the racing syndicate and how he was running horse races all over the. And it was, man, it was so. I mean, on any given weekend at Pimlico, you could see like Clark Gable. I mean, you could see like Bob Hope. I mean, you could see these guys, Churchill Downs. It was amazing. I mean, the celebrities used to show up for horse races. And this is weekend stuff. I'm not talking about Kentucky Derbies. I'm talking about just weekend horses.
Absolutely. You know, there was an era for about 20 years in the early parts of the 1900s, not even the early parts, from 1920 to probably almost to 1950, there were three major sports in America. And they're not the three you would guess. They were baseball, boxing, and horse racing. Those were the three huge sports. When Seabiscuit ran in a match race against War Admiral, the Triple Crown winner, Seabiscuit was this scrawny horse from the West Coast. Everybody stopped. That was during the Depression in the mid-30s. The whole country stopped. The race was on radio. Seabiscuit pulled the big upset over the regally bred Triple Crown winner, and horse racing was just a huge sport. When Hollywood used to shut down in the summers out in California, everybody had their vacation places in San Diego, but Bing Crosby and a lot of those guys, Bing was the ringleader, but a lot of the most luminary Hollywood people in their summer homes in San Diego missed horse racing at Santa Anita and Hollywood so much, they built their own track called Del Mar. Mm-hmm. And it's Del Mar is the coolest track ever because you can stand on Pacific Boulevard. On one side, you turn, you're facing the Pacific Ocean, and you walk across the street literally, and it's the entrance to Del Mar. The Breeders' Cup will be there this year, the World Championships of Horse Racing. So, yeah, what you just said, Tony, is right on point. Horse racing, boxing, and baseball were the big three in sports for a long, long time.
And by the way, since Bugsy was taking off the top, that's why his ass is dead at the age of 41. Yeah.
He was building the Flamingo in Vegas, and the budget kept going up.
Yes, it did. And the funny part about all that is we're talking about gambling because obviously the mob was so involved in gambling. But I think after about a year, he was making about $300,000 a month, and then they shot him because they figured when he was losing money, he couldn't take from the top. But when they're making money, he definitely must have been taking some money off the top. So,
well, his vision was pretty accurate on Las Vegas because he saw potential where everybody else saw a little dusty town with
first one to build. Yeah.
Yep, and there's if you stay at the Flamingo, and the Flamingo Hotel is still on the original site where Bugsy first constructed the original Flamingo. If you walk back in the gardens behind the hotel, they've got a little plaque on a concrete standard that's a little tribute to Bugsy Siegel, and it's well deserved because even though he was a vicious killer and the worst kind of mobster imaginable, it was his vision that gave birth to what is modern day Las Vegas. So there should be a statue, but I guess you don't build a statue to guys that routinely machine gun his opposition.
Six people showed up at his funeral, so that should tell you about.
He was kind of don't show affiliation with Bugsy or you'll be next.
No doubt. This program is running on the Coastal Sports Network. Special thanks to Angel and Pete Shepard, the entire crew, for having us on every single week. We're doing another show coming up on 10 o'clock Central Time on Friday, and we'll be doing that all the way through college football season. We're about a little 6 weeks away, and of course, we have the pro game, the Hall of Fame game, coming up here in a couple weeks on the 31st from Canton, Ohio. We're going to talk some more college football right now before we move into some other things. We'll have plays, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. We've already given you our numbers. We're doing fantastic again, and Case, I think, will hopefully join us maybe later on the show, but certainly on Friday he's going to join us. He, of course, the beat writer for the – he does the Las Vegas football team, but he does the Knights as well. And is he the beat writer for everything that's Las Vegas?
Yeah. Well, he's assigned, and he does the assignment. So he's assigned himself. He is the 100% beat writer for all things Raiders there. And during the season, they moved out to a suburb called Inspirata. So he is a half mile from the giant sprawling Raiders complex where everything goes on. So he basically, this time of year during training camp, reports there every day. But if they have a trade or a personnel move, he gets summoned to convene there just right down the road from his house where all the Raiders activities are. The stadium is more just off the strip, Allegiant Stadium, so that's about a 20-minute drive for him. But he covers all the Raiders stuff, home, road. He's in every press box every Sunday, so pretty good gig. And then he does big events. He doesn't cover the Knights game to game, but like in the playoffs, their regular beat writer, who's usually kind of a young guy. They just changed again last year, but he goes to those games. And like all the big fights, all the big UFC fights, he's usually ringside. He can kind of pick and choose the plum assignments. But the Raiders are his primary beat because the Raiders are the biggest deal there.
He's smiling, so he knows we're talking about him. Case Kiefer, he's the chief editor of the Las Vegas Sun, joins us now on K4 Wins. He'll join us again on Friday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time. We were just talking about, you think about what football team would be perfect to start in Sin City, and it's just the Raiders. It's the name, the Raiders. It's just, I mean, just everything from Al Davis to everything the Raiders have been through, just the perfect fit for Sin City. And I know you guys are looking forward to finally really getting into some good college, well, some good football period out in that area of the country. But congratulations on pulling in the Raiders. And I know you're very, very happy to be their beat guy.
Yeah, it's been fun. I was actually I was smiling at something Angel said backstage. Thanks to Angel for bearing with me. It's been a battle today. I don't know whatever happened to the old days when like all your internet stuff was just laying on the floor somewhere. I heard Kit mention that I moved here about 3 years ago next to the Raiders. So I had to track down all our internet stuff and get out some screw. I'm the least handy person ever. And I had to like unscrew the wall, and there's 8 million cords. I reset a bunch of things, and now we're crystal clear. So
there you go.
Yeah, I still cover the Raiders mostly, but I do a little bit of every sports now. Unfortunately, we've had some staffing changes. We don't really have much of a sports staff anymore. So basically I have during non-football season, I have a column in the Las Vegas Sun 2 times a week and the Las Vegas Weekly 1 time. It comes out weekly. So I do about 3 columns a week spread across just about everything that's going in Las Vegas. That being said, yeah, during football season, the Raiders and betting will be the biggest thing. So that'll be the primary driver of my time. But actually lately it's been a lot of Golden Knights because they pulled off a huge sign and trade with Mitch Marner. Yeah. So sorry, I missed the whole show to everyone.
But that's all right. No,
that's
fine.
I'm ready to dive into it.
It's been kind of boring. It's been a Kip Kiefer biography because how did I get into horse racing? And I gave my usual very concise answer.
It was very well.
We have an email question for Case also that could lead right into college football, Tony, that we got from drock@gmail.com. So, Case, if you could just tell us how you set your lines, if you can.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little complicated, but I guess basically you want to get – I'd say the easiest way and what I did to start was you know, there's some publicly available, you know, power ratings out there. I'd say some of the better ones. I'd say for sure, probably SP Plus by Bill Connolly. It was for a long time was part of Football Outsiders, which was like my football Bible. Taught me all about football analytics, really got me started. I think it's probably has less value now. But if you look at something like that, you know, you can easily put a point spread on a game. And, you know, I'm not saying just copy that straight up, but you know, if you're making your own I guess what I'm trying to get to is if you're starting, I would just make your own numbers and then cross check it with one of these power ratings. Then if you're way off, you're probably doing something wrong. But really the best way to start is just start thinking about the games, monitor the market, and like at the beginning of the week put all your numbers on your own games, cross reference it with both the market and one of these other power ratings, then go from there. That's still basically pretty much what I do. I feed in a lot of different data, like yards per play, yards per point, and then I make it a composite with regressing to the market. So I kind of average it with what the actual market is, and you can go back and back test that from other weeks. And then I do still like to pull in things like SP Plus or ESPN's FPI, which they've spent a ton of money on. I know people made fun of it a lot at the beginning, but it's pretty solid now. So if you're just getting started, I would say make your own numbers, and I guess to make it easy, just either make it a mean or a median with some of these power ratings out there, and you'll probably come out with something pretty good, and just look at how it's going and adjust from there, and try to find a way where you're both beating the market and winning more weeks than not.
What was the what has been the biggest disparity in your line and what the line is in Las Vegas? Can you remember one particular time where you're like, wow, we're off by 7-10 points here, and then did it come in?
Well, yeah, that's the biggest thing is why I said to cross-check it with another power rating, because usually if you're 7 to 10 points off, you're just missing something. I mean, I feel like I say the same thing every time we come up with these topics, but I mean, all these games, especially football-wise, just have millions of dollars bet on them. Someone's not making a, you know, eight-figure mistake and has the line like 7 or 10 points off. So if I am that far off, I can't remember a specific scenario. Well, I do remember one. God, this had to have been like 2018 or something. I wish I remember who Marshall was playing. I had like the Marshall whoever. It was like a Tuesday night game on ESPN, so it was one that was going to have a lot of betting action because nothing else was going on. I was like 8 points off or something, and I do think I ended up betting a little bit on the other side. Just I was like, I could not figure out why it was. Well, it came out like 2 hours before, I think, like the quarterback and the top receiver were suspended for something they did. So clearly someone had that information. I actually know who it was in the end. If you follow gambling at all, probably the biggest bettor in the world, more of a top-down guy. But I remember this guy named Spanky took a victory lap. Like, we had that for a week. So usually if there's this huge discrepancy, I would say operate with caution, because a lot of times – it's something you're missing, and sometimes it can be stuff you don't even know. Like in this guy, I wish I remember the teams, but in whatever situation this was, like their two best players were out. Some people knew it and were able to get down, you know, probably close to $1 million or at least hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
It was reflected in the market, and it wasn't publicly available until right before the game.
We need to hang out with Spanky.
No doubt. No doubt. Long gone are the days where you couldn't even play on any sports that were actually played in the city of Las Vegas. I remember going out there and watching UNLV, and you couldn't bet on a UNLV basketball game unless it was on the road. Now, of course, you could bet on everything. What kind of push are you expecting monetarily to have a National Football League team in Las Vegas, and what kind of people will be laying money on it every single week that normally wouldn't have if they're not playing the NFL anyway?
Yeah, it's ended up kind of being hard to say what the difference is, just because there's been so many factors. It's definitely been bigger. And, you know, if you come here during a Raiders weekend, I mean, it is just swarmed with people, both Raiders fans and visiting fans. So they're definitely betting more money. But, I mean, sports betting as a whole has just absolutely exploded since, obviously, we got expanded nationwide legalization. I mean, when the Raiders first really started talking about coming here in 2018, this was the big talk point. It's like, wow, how big is the handle going to be game by game? And, yeah, it's certainly lived up to expectations, but I think it's beyond just the Raiders coming here. It's you know, it's people becoming a lot more familiar with sports betting and willing to bet. You know, I think there's a lot of factors that have driven it. And yeah, I wanted to throw this in. When I was waiting backstage to come back on, I heard you talk about the Raiders being a perfect fit for Las Vegas. I can't remember the exact year, but it came out when we were talking about moving here. Al Davis had actually bought the domain name, I think, Las Vegas Raiders in like 1991.
Wow.
So it was literally like
that's crazy. Isn't it crazy?
But yeah, it certainly made a difference. And yeah, Las Vegas, you can bet everything. I know some of these newer states, they still do outlaw certain things. Like I know for many years, New Jersey was the biggest, took the most money of any state betting wise. I think New York might have passed them now once it got legalized. I mean, New Jersey just had all the books and just was taking a ton of money because of the population in New York. And for some reason, I think the law still there is you cannot bet on Rutgers. So if you look at like college basketball or college football lines, even on like DraftKings or something.
Why would you want to bet on Rutgers?
You know, Rutgers. Hey, value's value. It all pays the same. But I'm just saying there are still states where you see that, but not Nevada.
And two of the top five NBA draft picks from Rutgers. So maybe the Scarlet Knights or whatever. One thing I'll add to Case's, because I'm sure he can pontificate more on this. The dynamic of the Raiders in Las Vegas is so unique because if you look at the average ticket prices to NFL games on the secondary market, there's not a franchise in the league that compares. Las Vegas is so much higher because all these people living in these godforsaken places like Buffalo and Detroit, when that schedule comes out and they see their team is going to be in Vegas, mm-hmm. You can't believe the invasion every week of enemy fans. I've been to a couple of games in the last couple of years, one Steelers game and one Packers game. I'm telling you, and Case can back this up, it's 75-25, the road team at an NFL home game. It's really bizarre. and they drive the ticket prices because they'll pay any amount because we're going to Vegas and we're going to go see the Steelers in Vegas. I think they've been there two or three straight years, and it's all black and gold. It's really a different dynamic than almost any place in the entire league.
Yeah, Kip probably got two of the more extreme examples just with he'd been to the Packers and the Steelers game, and those are two of the biggest fan bases in the NFL. But yeah, it's certainly an issue. I think the Raiders would prefer that the season ticket holders keep their tickets. But, you know, you look at the secondary market prices, and the Raiders are just so much higher than everyone, like get-in price. So, I mean, I understand if you're a guy that bought Raiders season tickets, they haven't been very good to throw them up and sell them and make, you know, 2.5 times whatever you're paying. It's got to be tempting. I know the Raiders' big deal is that they feel like if they can turn this around and get winning, that it will change it to some extent, and they'll have more of a home field advantage, keep more fans in seats. But obviously, they haven't had a ton of success since being here. They've only made the playoffs once. They've been pretty bad the last 2 years. So they hope they're on the right path here with Pete Carroll. But it's definitely something they are talking about within Raiders headquarters, like you said, a couple miles from here, is that they want to find out. They want to find a way to keep that more silver and black than it has been in the first 5 years here.
K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com, at K4Winners on the X format. Make sure you check us out. And we have plays every single day. And, of course, if you can make money on it, we'll put it up. Wimbledon, women's, whatever it is, we'll make money on it is what we're doing.
Hey, right? By the way, on that Wimbledon that you're talking about, we gave out the two finalists in that win before Wimbledon started on the futures. We had Swiatek and whatever the American girl that just didn't even show up for the finals name. Emma Poza Rosa, whatever her name is. Those were the two that we put out while everybody else was all over Coco Gauff and some of those other things. Really, really paying attention to tennis. I mean, it's very easy to put out the guys, but to put the girls where we did, and then we even had Fritz to make the semifinals. I think he was plus 450 to make the semifinals, and he made it. So some really good things that we had, even in tennis. And then if you watch, you know, the show every week with Case, he has been killing golf. Good grief.
You've been killing golf for years now. I mean, last year you were on fire too.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, mostly second places now. It's insane. I had second and third place this week. I think I said to bet Rory on the show, and he came up just short. I mean, just could not make a putt down the stretch. So, yeah, I've been staying afloat, but the reality of golf is, like, you know, you need these big spike outright wins, and I've been kind of getting shut out on outrights, but, you know, it's a thing that I always talk about on the show is looking back at your process. I don't really feel like I'm doing anything wrong. I keep coming up with the second and third place guys instead of the first. It was the opposite early in the year, but even on the starting lineup. I mean, I was hitting winner after winner, so it all evens out, and hopefully we can just stay afloat for a little bit before we start getting some firsts instead of some seconds and thirds.
We're going to go really hot and heavy college football. All four of us love college football. We think it's the best sport out there. It's where you can make the most money, and we're going to be all over it coming up here in just a few weeks. SEC Media Days going on this past weekend, and Kip and I had a really interesting discussion yesterday. We could have probably talked for 3 or 4 hours about the Big Ten and the SEC. Of course, it's not the Autonomy 4 now. It's the Autonomous 2. Those two, Tony and Greg, talking about Petiti and, of course, Sankey, trying to decide what they need to do in order to get 16 teams in instead of 12 teams in the playoff. Sankey came out and said, listen, if we can't agree, we'll just stay with 12. That'll be fine. And Kip and I both kind of laughed at that.
Sankey. Yeah, because TV doesn't agree. That's not fine.
No, it's not going to be fine. And of course, the SEC wanted to go that 16-team format with five of the highest ranked conference champions plus 11 at large. The Big Ten wanted to go with guaranteed our automatic conference winners spots and then playing games to decide that seeding. Four automatic spots. And we mentioned during the show, I just hate the word automatic. I feel like you got to earn it. You got to play for it. And just because you get automatic, next thing you know, you got Indiana who loses one game last year. Next thing you know, they're getting home games in Boise State. It's outrageous. But with 16 teams, the SEC certainly is going to probably plan on getting another two or three teams in, as the Big Ten probably should too. Case, I'll start with you before we wrap up the show. We got 4 or 5 minutes here, but your thoughts on what the SEC is doing right now, college football as a whole, and the SEC and Big Ten. Can we get on the same page so we can get to 16 teams in 2026?
Yeah, I don't really pay attention to all the proposals or whatever. I mean, as you know, my whole thing is I mean, working, obviously, covering stuff pertinent to Las Vegas, but also more than anything at this point, betting. And to me, it doesn't matter how many teams are in. It doesn't matter what Sankey and Petiti or whatever are fighting over. Just let me know when they figure it out. I am with you guys. Like, it's going to get to 16. It's never in the history do they talk about expanding and it ends up doesn't happen.
Yeah, don't. Not happening. Yeah.
There's more money. They'll get to 16. The Big Ten Media Days is here next week. I'll be there at least one of the days. It's the same as Raiders training camp starting, so I don't think I'll go both days. We got Mountain West Media Days. I know you guys probably aren't all that excited about tomorrow. I'll be at. I guess I'll see. We'll see when the Big Ten commissioner talks. I don't know if I'll be going to his presser. I don't know what all I'm going to attend with Big Ten Media Days. But, yeah, next week in Las Vegas, just another thing going on here. All these conferences want their footprint here. We had Big 12 last year. They ended up going back to Dallas this year. But the Big Ten, I think the last of the major conferences to hold their Media Days here at Mandalay Bay next week. We'll see if Petiti has any response to Sankey and what he says at Mandalay.
One thing you'll never hear in Las Vegas. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Big 12 Media Days. They didn't distinguish themselves too well in Las Vegas last year, picking Arizona State as the 18th and last team in the Big 12 last year at Big 12 Media Days. Of course, Arizona State won the Big 12 and appeared in the playoffs. This year, they've really gone into an exciting scenario, picking Iowa State and Kansas State as the top two teams. And that would be, if they're right, which they won't be based on their previous record, Iowa State and Kansas State actually play the first game of the entire year in Ireland this year. It could be bookends if they're right. They might play the first game and the championship game in the Big 12 if that all plays out that way. But I have my doubts. I think that's my first football suggestion this year. However we can bet against it being Iowa State and Kansas State in the Big 12 championship game, I think that's a lock.
I don't know what you saw, but the truth is even worse than this, actually. I got to be honest. I'm not going to be Captain Hindsight here. I had no problem with putting Arizona State where they did last year. If I voted in the Big 12 poll, which I think I actually did have the invite, and I just didn't get it done in time. My thing is, I don't want to vote in these polls if I'm not totally ready. And their media days were early last year. I hadn't done all work, so I didn't end up voting. But I would have had Arizona State 14, 15, or 16 for sure. What's worse is this year they've totally scrapped it. So I don't know what poll you saw. You might have seen some other poll. Big 12 said, we're not doing one this year because they were so embarrassed by last year Arizona State. That to me is worse than anything. That's just embarrassing, just admitting defeat. And I know I've been gone a lot of the show, so I'm going to get a lot of actionable info. Out of those two teams that you saw at the top, I do like one and I don't like the other. I do think Kansas State should have a bounce back year. They have all the pieces. I mean, Avery Johnson was like a Heisman dark horse at this time last year. Now everyone thinks he stinks because he had like one mediocre year. I think Kansas State will be very good. Iowa State, I think, takes a step back. I'd be very surprised if Iowa State wins the Big 12. I shouldn't say that for anyone in the Big 12 because we saw anyone can win it last year, but I'm down on Iowa State, up on Kansas State. I haven't looked at that line for that Ireland game, but I got to think as of right now, just off the top of my dome, I'm going to have a strong Wildcats lean.
Kai, we'll finish up with you too, man, because we were talking about, you know, are we going to have, and I remember, you know, I was doing a show with Jay Barker. He brought this up like 15 years ago, that we're going to have four 16 team conferences, and it'll just be down to the 64 teams, and everything will be D2, D3, blah, 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 blah. And obviously, I don't think we're going to have that because we get the Big Ten already expanding beyond that. But your thoughts on what college football is going to look like in 5 years?
Well, I mean, I think, I don't know if I should say what I put on the text about what I think between the Big Ten and the SEC, but I mean, if the two commissioners are going to keep a measuring stick out to measure who has the biggest wiener, and, you know, that's what they're going to have to do to decide who's going to get control of college football. You know, I really wish they would go in and do what they were talking about, even if it was Saban, and have a commissioner that's running the whole thing, because the NCAA sucks. Going to 4 16-team conferences would suck. You know, that would be brutal. You know, unfortunately, also with NIL, I mean, the whole landscape of college football has completely changed from, you know, what it was just 5 years ago, much less 10 or 15 years ago. And you know, unfortunately, teams like, you know, Alabama and Georgia are seeing those repercussions because now everybody can pay their football players instead of just Alabama paying them. And, you know, unfortunately for Alabama, a Dodge Charger and $50,000 doesn't get you the best players in the world anymore. So that's interesting. And now you've got people like Ohio State and Texas spending $22 million on a roster. So When are we going to regulate free agency in college football? And they're going to have to do something like that. Otherwise, they're going to get, there's no loyalty in college football anymore. You can be the hugest Tennessee fan in the world and love Nico Iamaleava. And now you got to be a UCLA fan if you like him. Or, you know, you can go through the rosters of Alabama, Texas, you know, just about everywhere. And you've got to go and you've got to go somewhere else to find your favorite players. So even though I'm a diehard Tennessee fan, love college football, you know, I'm this close to saying, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to go to the NFL. At least they regulate it a little bit better.
I do think, and we'll have a show with Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director, coming up on Thursday here on Tony Curry Radio. It's a really good show, and he pretty much bears all because he's coming from, obviously, that group of five stance, and they're just getting bludgeoned because they can't keep up with anything. Although, you know, based on whether it's a 12 or 16 team playoff team, if you end up winning every game in your group of five, you got a good shot at making the playoffs, which I think everyone's always said, listen, that would be fair. And they may only get one team in. I'm not saying UAB is going to do that, not with Trent Dilfer at the helm right now, but maybe down the road you can have more of those Boise State, maybe more of those teams like that to get a chance to actually play with the big boys in the playoffs. It should be really interesting. I do think the transfer portal will change, and I think they'll – right now you can go play wherever you want. You used to have to sit out a year. Do you remember – it used to be you'd have to ask your coach, hey, listen, do you mind if I stay within our own conference? And the teams could say no. They could say no, you're not playing for, you know, you're leaving Alabama. You're not playing for Auburn. And now it's like you can go wherever the hell you want and you can play seven different teams in seven different years. I do think they're going to probably have a situation where they'll give you one shot to do that so you don't have to sit out any time. But if you want to transfer again, you'll probably have to sit out a year and make it a little more painful. So that's just one of the many things I think they're going to have to tie up. But I totally agree with you. The Wild Wild West, it's just gotten out of the bag, and it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube. So we'll see what happens. We can't wait, man. We're 6 weeks away from college football. I'm knee-deep. And thanks to Kip and our show, the Kiefer and Curry show yesterday. I got so jonesed up on college football. We went about 2 hours, man, and we were just nipping at the top. We were ready to go. So it's going to be fantastic. We're going to be doing the show again Friday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time, 10 to 11 o'clock, and then every Tuesday as well. So Tuesday we'll kind of reset, go through the weekends, what's going on. And Friday, of course, we'll have all of our plays. K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. Go to our website. Plays up every single day. You can, of course, subscribe to that and get in and hit it about a 70% rate. And I'll score on X at K4 Winners. K4 Winners, also SR102.9, The Game. And, of course, wherever you see all of your hashtags at the bottom of the screen, thank you so much to the Coastal Sports Network for having us on here on Tony Curry Radio and K4 Wins. Gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate you.
Have a good one.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.